What's up, everybody? Ryan and Dave here from Movies On Up.
Old school this week. We did a bunch of news, a lot of casting for upcoming Marvel superhero movies.
Some trailers, some we're both on board for, some we disagree on, and Rec 4.
Take it away, theme song. What's up? This is Movies On Up, episode 30, the epic finale that will live forever. Not quite the finale for us, or at least we don't think so. We're planning on being back next week alongside my regular partner, Dave. I'm Ryan.
I'm Dave. He's back. Dave.
We're back with a brand new edition. Yeah. Post tryptophan, Thanksgiving.
I was sick.
Dave was sick.
My throat hurt.
Yeah. So apologies for not having a show last week. I'm sure it absolutely ruined your lives, but we're going to make our best attempt to make up for it with this week's episode. Right out of the chute, strong tagline from a movie which I'm sure everyone has seen at this point, except for the possibility of maybe you and I, but everyone else in these United States has, of course, seen this movie. If you think you know what it is, you can send it to us in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can get us at us on Facebook. Facebook.com/moviesonup or through our Twitter @moviesonup. Let us know what you think that movie is, and we've got a prize package just waiting to be put in the mail for you. Dave, I mentioned this is a movie that everyone has seen. It's a movie everyone has seen and still is going to see. I'm sure it was one of the top places on the box office this week.
Yeah, it's finally starting to slow down. Saw a 60% drop this week, but still took number one with over $17 million. So that's Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2, since I forgot we hadn't say that yet.
Well, I was thinking, do we need to say it? Because technically it's the answer to our contest.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also, we don't care at this point. We're helping you.
Like, it's already coming out of theaters. It's been out for a few weeks. It's at just under $255 million American. So it's doing even better overseas. Skyfall, still killing it. Sneaky fantasy film ball pick that some people made that I completely overlooked and never would have considered it.
And I love Bond movies and didn't take it.
$16.5 million for number two. $245 million so far. I thought best case scenario would have been $200 million. I really did. And that was being generous and being high. It's now the highest grossing, not just Bond movie, spy movie ever. So
take that, Haywire.
Yeah. Number three, Rise of the Guardians. It actually bumped up a spot. Did a respectable $13 million, but it's only at $48 million after 2 weeks on a $145 million budget. This could possibly affect DreamWorks' upcoming slate because they're about to lose probably $50 million on this movie. Lincoln, just right behind, less than 10,000 behind in number fourth with $13 million. It's already at $83 million. Off a 65 budget. Then Life of Pi, respectable $12 million, but it's performing better than I thought it would. It's at $48 million. And then Wreck-It Ralph, the new releases this week.
To this point, it had been the usual suspects.
Yeah.
And then, oh yeah, there were two new movies that came out this past week. It was The Collector.
The one I didn't expect to make it. How it got a wide release in like post-Thanksgiving week, I don't get it. The Collection.
Something had to come out, right?
Sequel to a movie that nobody cared about. It opened with $3.1 million in 10th place, which is even less than the original opened with. The original didn't even open with $4 million, so how it got a sequel. But then the surprising one to me is Killing Them Softly, the new Andrew
Dominic.
Huh?
That's Brad Pitt.
Andrew Dominic directed Brad
sure.
Pitt movie.
James Gandolfini.
Yeah, $6.8 million for 7th place. I don't know if it's a timing thing or I think it looks great. I've heard it's great. Like I haven't read a lot of negative stuff about it. There just wasn't an audience for it.
Well, and maybe the audience is still catching up with all the things that are out. I mean, you know, we talked about the first six movies are all pretty solid. They're making a ton of money. And
I think it's timing wise because go down the six movies ahead of it. Twilight. It's the end of a huge franchise. Skyfall. 23rd installment of a huge franchise. Rise of the Guardians, big time family movie. Lincoln, your Oscar bait like Spielberg, Daniel Day-Lewis, Abraham Lincoln. Life of Pi, you know, it's pretty. It's based on a popular book. And then Wreck-It Ralph, another family one. So it makes sense that all of those are ahead of them. I just think releasing this now, this if it were in September, I think this movie would have done a lot better.
Right now, and it's a great problem to have for us as people that want to go see movies, is it's just so overpopulated with good stuff.
I would see any of the top seven and not
Twilight.
I would see any of the second to seventh.
Okay.
without having to be dragged to see it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And at that point, if you see one movie a week, which, you know, that is actually asking a lot, especially with movie prices. And I'm not going to bitch because I like it. I have a movie podcast. I like going to the movies. But it's very easy to be a month behind because, you know, I see one movie a week. So I haven't seen Argo yet. That's a movie I'd love to see. I haven't seen my fantasy film ball pick, Cloud Atlas. That's another one I've got to get to see.
Yeah, good luck.
No one else saw it.
It's on its way out. Argo, speaking of, just crossed 100 million, and it took its time getting there. Like, it just made another 2 million this week for 13th to push it over. So it was a slow burn. It is just now starting to fade. But it's just crazy. And, I mean, it's a Brad Pitt movie, that Killing Them Softly. 6.8 its opening week. It's on a $15 million budget. So it's not like it's going to hurt anything. I just feel like if this was a like late August, early to mid-September release, I think you're doubling that at least.
Well, probably. I mean, it didn't go up against anything in terms of releasing against it. It just so happened that the movies that have released over the past month just haven't gone anywhere. And usually that's not something you see this many movies all with staying power. But it's just kind of a weird thing that's happened. And it you know, we talked about it, or we were going to talk about it a little bit last week, was the 5-day Thanksgiving week was the highest performing 5-day Thanksgiving week of all time. So, I mean, it's, you know,
thanks mostly to Twilight and Bond.
Yeah, and Bond, exactly.
Because of those, November was huge.
Yeah, and this is going to be, by the end of the year, when you factor in things like the Avengers, like the Batman, it's going to be a huge year for movies in general. We'll probably get into that.
And get used to it later. For next Thanksgiving, Hunger Games. The next three Thanksgivings, actually, Hunger Games. Also, next Thanksgiving is, what, Thor 2? So, I mean, you're going to have these big tentpole movies. There's going to be at least two or three. Plus, there's going to be some family stuff coming out.
Yeah,
so,
and I think that maybe it's just being cynical, but I think that, you know, as we see the rise of Black Friday, which is now becoming like Gray Thursday, I mean, this is going to be a huge movie-going time where before, you know, we didn't have these sales. You know, there wasn't a reason to go out of your house on Thanksgiving. And now people are. Movie theaters are located near shopping complexes. So you're going to see this be incredibly valuable real estate, which, you know, again, that's going to be good for moviegoers because there'll just be a plethora of options.
I mean, it's always been a decent release time for movies, but it just seems like
it's not this saturated.
It seems over the past, like, 5 to 6 years, now it's you have a good 2 or 3 weeks that you could put these movies here or put them right in the middle of the summer and they're gonna do just as well. So it's cool that you have this little time now where you do get your franchises, your tent poles after the slow time of September, October, right before your award heavy season. So it's I like it. I like having like a little mini blockbuster season right there.
Yeah, I think having kind of a second summer blockbuster season but with some even more variety is not a bad thing for anyone, for the moviegoer or the movie industry. Also, a movie that was somewhat of a blockbuster, though you might disagree, is Chronicle. Apparently, in hindsight, that movie was amazing. The film's star, Dane DeHaan, officially has landed the role of Harry Osborn in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, according to Mark Webb's tweet.
I guess I'm happy to see them getting somebody that looks like he's in high school at least, but I didn't think anything was that great about Chronicle, including the...
Or Spider-Man, so this works for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, including the actors. So I guess whatever.
Speaking of actors, there is a galaxy-wide search has begun for Marvel's Peter Quill. Joel Edgerton from Warrior and Dave's Dreams, Jack Houston from Boardwalk Empire, Jim Sturgis of Cloud Atlas, and Lee Pace from Lincoln, as well as Eddie Redmayne from the upcoming Les Mis, said to be testing for the lead role in Guardians of the Galaxy, which is not the Rocket Squirrel, not that one.
No, no, there was talk of Michael Rooker voicing Raccoon Squirrel, Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
I like this list here. Like, I don't like Jim Sturgis. He's about the only one. Lee Pace is interesting because especially compared to, like, him and Joel Edgerton, I wouldn't see going up for a lot of the same roles. But I like all these actors, and whether it goes to Joel Edgerton or not, it's a matter of time before he's in a superhero movie. I mean, Joe...
So there's becoming enough of them where...
Well, Joe Carnahan came out and said his Daredevil that ended up not happening because it went back to Marvel, he came out and said Joel Edgerton would have been his Matt Murdock. So, I mean, and then this news, so it's just like, he's gonna be in a superhero movie, and I think he's good. He's a really good actor.
Although, I mean, we've been thinking that same thing, really, about Nathan Fillion for a while, and, I mean, he's still yet to be in a superhero movie. Maybe he gets his chance with Ant-Man. Maybe not.
He could be in this, too. I mean, not two. He could be in Ant-Man or this.
And there were a couple other names that kind of were floated around as possible screen tests. I don't remember him being on that list. But, yeah, I'm okay with most of these guys. And I do think Edgerton's good. I like him. I have no particular attachment to this character or, you know, this movie at all. So it makes no difference to me who they cast, because I'm not, I won't be pissed off either way, really.
I mean, the thing I like the most is that these are all good actors. None of them are superstars.
Yeah.
So you're not trying to cast a big name to lead this franchise that nobody knows just to have a big name in there.
Yeah.
They're actually going to just go with the best cast they can and make the best movie they can and rely on the Marvel name to get it instead of just going after star power, because none of these guys are headlining movies.
Nobody at this point is going to go see a movie because of any of these guys.
Exactly. I mean, they're not names above the credit guys yet.
For Warrior, I mean, was that
it bombed?
Tom, well, yeah, it bombed, but
it was just as much Edgerton's movie as Tom Hardy, but nobody went and saw it.
But it was a good movie, though.
It was a really good movie, yeah. But nobody went to see it.
But that's what I mean. That's my point, is nobody's going to go see these movies because of these guys.
Exactly.
At this point, but I do think that they're all, you know, the ones that I've seen are all real good.
Because I think Huston and Redmayne are on their way, too. I think they're going to be, like, big-time leading guys, too. So I think whoever they get out of this list, I'll exclude Sturgis, I think is a good choice.
That's kind of the good thing about where Marvel's at now is, you know, even if we're going to call this a B project, though they won't, and it's not being treated like one, but, you know, it's not their frontline, you know, superheroes. But, you know, at that point, you know, you can get really, really good actors to want to be involved in a project like this. And they're willing to get good actors and put them in a movie that not a whole lot of buzz would be there going into it. I do think that kind of shows you the kind of clout that Marvel has now, where maybe it's not, you know, not their ace movie, but they can still get guys that could carry an ace movie. One guy that can definitely carry an ace movie from Marvel in talks to come on back and reprise the role that he is at this point, I think, almost synonymous with Marvel going back to the future past for a sequel cast. Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart already set to play future versions of Mikey Fassbender and James McAvoy. Bryan Singer looking to add Hugh Jackman to the cast of future past, which is kind of a big deal. They kind of need him, right?
Yes.
They need a Wolverine.
Here's my thing is, First Class did an awesome job distinguishing itself from the disaster of X3.
Yes.
It did an awesome job of starting a new franchise.
Right.
Then you're erasing that. You're making First Class irrelevant.
You're making it a prequel. To those other ones.
Yes.
An absolute prequel. Not a reboot, a prequel.
Exactly. You're taking everything that it did to establish its own timeline, to establish its own universe, and just saying, fuck it. And just making it back and just going back to that.
But with having a cameo by Wolverine, already do that?
No, I already complained about that.
Yes,
that's
you
my
did.
Biggest beef. But that having that cameo and having Ian McKellen, Patrick Stewart, fucking Hugh Jackman in it. And plus, what's this do to Wolverine? The Wolverine is doing everything it can to distance itself from X-Men Origins, which in a way tried to distance itself from X-Men 3. So what's that do to that? You're trying to kick off a new Wolverine franchise, but now you're trying to get him back into the X-Men franchise. I don't think it's very well thought out. Yes, it would be cool to see the two casts merge in some extent, but it seems like you're trying to take the First Class franchise and merge it with the original X-Men franchise, and then take the Wolverine franchise and merge it with this franchise. I don't get it. I don't understand it. And that was my biggest concern, and I've been saying this from the beginning. I think they're doing everything I didn't want them to do.
I can look at it in kind of two different phases. The phase where they added Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, I didn't like that as much. I think McAvoy and Fassbender did such a good job of establishing those characters in First Class. It kind of made you forget about Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, their portrayals.
Fassbender was Magneto.
Yeah.
As good as Ian McKellen was, Ian McKellen was Magneto.
Yeah.
Fassbender stole that from him and fucking made it his own.
Right. So I think you could have recast older actors to play those two roles, and that would have been fine. The second phase with the Wolverine thing, I kind of do think Jackman is the right way to go there, because, you know, he's going to look essentially the same, you know, throughout the entire course, throughout, you know, the 60s, which they already put him in, like it or not. You know, he was already in First Class. I think it makes a lot of sense to have him there. And in terms of, like, what it would do to the Wolverine, I think that, you know, even the thought about this Days of Futures Past is like kind of an alternate reality thing. So I can envision an X-Men universe that had, you know, X1, 2, 3. I can envision an X-Men universe that had First Class. I can envision a universe that had Origins and has the Wolverine and all that stuff. And I guess they can share the same actors, but I can at least separate them like that. Maybe I'm just working too hard to make it work.
I mean, I guess if anybody could do it, I guess Singer is the one I would trust most with it. And it just makes me wonder if this is why Vaughn left, if Star Wars thing isn't happening. Maybe he was forced out. Maybe he just didn't want to do all this. But if anybody can, it's Singer. So I guess I'll hold out for now. But I do have my doubts.
Fair enough. After the last couple installments of our next franchise here, I've got my doubts. Long negotiation for this sci-fi franchise appears to be close to its termination. Megan Ellison, the founder of Annapurna Pictures, who has done some pretty good stuff and about to do some even better stuff here recently with The Master and Zero Dark Thirty, is teaming up with her brother, David, and his Skydance Pictures, who put out Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, Jack Reacher, and Star Trek Into Darkness, as well as the Brad Pitt zombie movie World War Z. They're working together to secure the rights for the Terminator franchise. The two are looking to make two films before the rights revert back to James Cameron in 2019.
Can't we just let it go? The story was told with two. I mean, Terminator 2 ended the story. I had no interest in Terminator 3. I sure as fuck have no interest in a McG-directed one, or McG-directed anything. There's nowhere for the story to go. I don't think there's anywhere you could pick up the story and make it interesting. Especially when you go in with, make a movie that people care about first. They're going in wanting to make two. McG's was supposed to be a new trilogy. Like, you have to make people care about it again first. They don't just care about it because it's Terminator. Terminator 1 and 2 were good fucking movies. That doesn't mean that anything with Terminator related is going to be good.
No, and I think that it's probably lost some of its bankability with T3 and with Salvation. I think even bringing Schwarzenegger back, which they're going to be doing, it, like you're saying, I mean, Terminator and Terminator 2 were great movies. They stand up. I watched Terminator 2 this weekend, and it was still, the special effects were not quite as mind-blowing as they were when I was 8, but they're great movies. I think there was kind of fertile ground for Salvation and the McG movie. It just, you know, didn't end up being that great. I mean, it was
far
better.
Well, it was in the hands of
McG. Well, yeah. You know, we had seen snippets of the future from, you know, the first couple Terminator movies. So I think there was a lot there they could have done, but it just, it wasn't carried off real, real well. I don't know, you know, what the Ellisons are going to be doing with these two new ones, but and I don't even really know how the law works in terms of rights reverting back. I know that's something that really hasn't been challenged by anybody yet. But I would love to see Cameron get a hold of this again. I mean, the first two were great sci-fi movies, and you know, if he can, you know, fit it in between Avatar and whatever else he's doing, I'd love to see him get it back.
But the first two wrapped it up. It did it. It was like Alien 3. Like, it wrapped up that story. Why are you trying to make more?
Yeah, there didn't.
Don't give finality to the story and then try to make more story.
I understand what you're saying, and that is an excellent point. I guess I always think that, well, if you can find something more to do and it's interesting, I'm willing to give it a try. And it won't diminish how I feel about the first two. And it still doesn't. I've seen all the Terminator movies at this point. I watched the television show. But I still love the first one. I still love the second one. And if they could do something cool, I'd be all for it. But I guess I feel like I would rather it go back to Cameron. I feel that, you know, he would be the one.
But does he want it? Does he have any interest in
doing it? That's another great question, because, I mean, I think he's got his plate full with, you know, his new franchise that, you know, by all accounts, did I like Avatar more than the Terminator? No.
Did it make a lot more money than the two Terminators combined?
Yes, it
did.
Fuck
yes.
Yes, it did.
Do people give a shit about a second and third Avatar?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Oof. I think, you know, that's going to be something that when Avatar 2 comes out, I'm going to play that back for you, because I think people are absolutely going to give a shit.
I'll stand by it.
Okay.
Less than half of what the original made.
I'll tell you why I don't think that's realistic. Because all the people that saw the first one, maybe with the possible, you still haven't seen it yet, have you?
No, I don't have any interest in it.
All right, but what I'm saying is the people that did go to see it are going to give the second one a try because of the way they felt about the first one. That's going to happen. If the second one sucks, which it could, then I think you'll see a drop-off on the third one. But you won't see the drop-off on the second one. If anything, it'll be even bigger, because the people that maybe didn't jump on the Avatar bandwagon, if there were six other than you, will jump on for the second one. So I think the second one will be bigger. And then if it doesn't end up being a quality movie, you'll see a drop-off.
I stand by half of what the original made, which is still a shit ton of money.
Well, mark this in your calendar. And then on Movies On Up, episode, I don't know, 150, whenever Avatar 2 comes out.
Avatar 2 comes out.
Yeah. Avatar 2, Navi Boogaloo, Bloogaloo, because they're blue. Get it?
Boo to that.
Fuck it.
Electric Bloogaloo is pretty good, though. I'll give you that.
Thank you. So I know after this last story, you're all wondering what else the folks from Annapurna Pictures have got going on. Well, I've got sympathy for your curiosity. They're backing a remake of Chan-Woo Park's finale of his revenge trilogy. So we've got the Spike Lee redoing Old Boy, and now we've got these folks that will be doing Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, which will be written by the writer of The Departed, William Monahan, and is set to star and be produced by Charlize Theron.
I like Charlize Theron in this role.
She seems to really like this role. She's been trying to get this done for a while.
And she's really into it. And she's proven she commits to what she does. So with her behind this, I'm a little more for it. If it was just, if you just gave me a director, even William Monahan, and said they're going to make it, I wouldn't have any interest. But because Charlize Theron is there from the get-go, I'm into it.
I will admit, this one, of the three, this is the one I haven't seen. I can't really... What I can say about Old Boy is that doesn't need a remake. Unless you're going to do things different, what's the point? Old Boy's a great movie, but it's not one that you ever need to see again. To me, it's a lot like Saw, in that you see it once, and it can be really good for what it is.
But you have to take into consideration the xenophobia, that not everybody's going to watch a Korean movie.
Yeah,
that's
you're
why
right.
There's such a market for Let Me In or these...
The
well,
Girl with the Dragon
Tattoo.
Market
for that, yeah. That's why there's such a market for these foreign remakes, because people won't watch those. So, I mean, you could do like a Let Me In that's exactly the same and open it up to a new audience.
But these movies, Old Boy The Revenge trilogy, I don't think...
It's hard to imagine them not being dumbed down a little.
Dumbed down, but I mean, the people that would see these movies and would like them are people that, you know, I think, like, have already seen them in the original. I can't imagine that there's somebody that would say, oh, I would love a story where this happens and this happens and this happens. I just don't want to see it happen to Korean people. Like, you know what I mean? I'm really trying hard not to give anything away.
I know. I mean, I'm just on a different boat because I'm interested in the Old Boy remake. I want to see what Spike Lee does with it. I like the cast. I think it'll be interesting.
I like the cast a lot.
I think it'll be interesting at the very least. Is it necessary? No. But I also like, I've made the point about Let Me In before. Was it necessary? No.
Really not necessary.
Was it good? I thought it was really fucking good. So I'm not the biggest Monahan fan. I think he relies on the same stuff. The same tricks a little too often. But
well, even there, that's a remake of a Korean movie, Departed, yeah. Infernal Affairs. I mean, those movies were very, very similar. But I guess at that point, we're talking about a crime movie. And yeah, maybe there's a larger audience for a crime movie, a straight up like gangster crime movie, than there is for, you know, what kind of movie I would call Old Boy or, you know, Sympathy for...
I'm on it because of Theron. Like, she's so fucking talented, and she makes choices she wants to make, so I don't think she gets the credit. I know it's hard to consider her underrated when she's won an Oscar
yeah.
And is considered one of the most... She's not nearly as big as she should be, because she does make movies she wants to make.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, she does, and I think that... You know, even recently when she was in Prometheus, like, she was, I think, supposed to be the lead in that. But
the newbie Rapace part,
yeah. But she took a smaller role just because she wanted to do that movie, and I think it may have been because she was doing the Snow White thing at the time as well. It was something else. I can't remember exactly
what it was.
But, I
mean, she's going to destroy it in Mad Max. That Fury Road, the Tom Hardy Mad Max, she's going to fucking kill it. Like, I love seeing her... in roles like this or like that. Like, she does different shit. She's not just a pretty face, and I really like that about her.
I like the pretty face part about her. That's fine with me. So yeah, maybe you'll see this. I probably won't. You'll have to tell me about this and the Old Boy remake. Why not the second one? Like, why are we not getting that?
I don't know.
It just seems weird that, like, it's a trilogy. The stories aren't intertwined at all. They're thematically similar, but they just picked up on these two to do. That's all right. There's a million ways to make money, and maybe just doing these two movies will generate some. There's also about a million ways to make $500 million for Seth MacFarlane. He will direct the Western comedy A Million Ways to Die in the West next summer. It's his follow-up to Ted.
I'm interested to see what he does, because Ted was a big hit. But I don't think it was that much of a departure from Family Guy.
No, probably not.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but from what I heard, what I've seen, seemed along that same boat. So if you're a Family Guy fan, I would think Ted would make sense. This is straying out a little bit more. I want to see what he can do.
And I think that, you know, he's got enough of a following from Family Guy, from Ted, that there will be people that will absolutely, maybe they don't care about Westerns, but they'll give this a try because it's from Seth MacFarlane. And I'm one of those people. Like, I'd watch it. I kind of like Westerns. It's been a while since we've had a good Western comedy. I mean, City Slickers.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just curious to see what he does, because he hit big on the first one, but then you look at Mike Judge, who made the jump from animated comedy. He hit big with Office Space. Yeah. That was a huge hit.
Was it a hit at the time, or was that one of those ones that just found its
audience later?
Yeah, so that's a little bit different than a $500 million movie. Yeah. How much Ted made. It was a bunch of money.
Yeah, because even like Idiocracy with Mike Judge, like, had its audience. I would consider it a hit.
Yeah.
Extract, he kind of fell off. Like, Office Space should have propelled him to be this big-time director, and it just didn't. So I guess this movie's make or break for Seth MacFarlane. If it comes out and it's a mediocre hit, that might be enough for him not to get any more movies.
Well, I mean, he's going to get Ted 2. Like,
yeah,
that's you don't even have to mention that. That's something that's already been confirmed. That's going to happen. Maybe this isn't necessarily make or break. Maybe it'll be it could only work to his benefit. And then Ted 2, if this doesn't work, would be kind of a make or break for him. But we're talking about a guy that's got more money than he can ever possibly spend. So, yeah. You know, what he'll be fine.
Which is why I want to see him do, because he definitely found what works for him and he's maximized it. And yeah. I'll never knock anybody for that. So I hope this is different, and I hope this shows a new side of him while still having that Seth MacFarlane niche to it.
Yeah, he has a sense of humor, and you know, this is his sense of humor. It's what he brings to whatever he does. So, you know, do I think that, you know, he needs to completely change, you know, his comedy for everything he does? No. But you know, it would be interesting if there weren't any talking animals in this movie, and it was, I think, honestly, one of my favorite comedies of all time was Blazing Saddles. That was a Western comedy. And I think if anyone can come close to doing what Mel Brooks did for that, I don't think I'd put too many people ahead of Seth MacFarlane. Speaking of follow-ups and big-time directors, Guillermo del Toro is heading from the Rim to the Crimson Peak. He will direct the movie Crimson Peak for Legendary Pictures, hoping to start production sometime in 2014. The project has been in the works for a little while. It was originally, the script was written by Del Toro and his mimic buddy, Matthew Robbins. They sold it to Universal, but that was quite some time ago, like we said, so that deal kind of is off the table now. Crimson Peak was one of several scripts that Del Toro sent to Legendary, including At the Mountains of Madness, which apparently is not dead yet.
It is. Del Toro likes to bring this up every time. I can't see At the Mountains of Madness happening. He's got Pacific Rim coming out, which I'll call it. It's going to be a monster hit.
Pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. I had to think about that for a second. I think it's going to be huge. I think it's going to really change what people look at him to do. I think the kind of offers he's going to get after that are going to be a lot different. They just hired a screenwriter today to work on the Pacific Rim sequel. So figure even if he does do Crimson Peak, he's probably going to have to do Pacific Rim 2 right after that. So that after that, he's going to have his pick. Somebody might offer him another franchise. But so I don't see, if At the Mountains of Madness happens, I don't see it being directed by Del Toro.
And it might not be.
I mean, he's got that. He's been producing movies. He's got, you know, Mama. He did Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. He did Orphanage, which I think Mama looks great. I think the other two were quality. So it might be one that he has his hands on, but he's not directing.
In Crimson Peak, originally, I think he was just supposed to produce that for Universal. But I think the fact that, you know, he is and has developed such a relationship with Peter Jackson and Legendary, that if it came down to, you know, can I I'd really like to direct, you know, whatever it is, whether it's Crimson Peak or Madness, I think, you know, he could probably get the okay from Peter Jackson to do that and maybe hand Pacific Rim 2 off to someone else.
That's true, because you also got to consider the way Del Toro works is he's not like a Tony Scott or a McGee or like a Ratner, some of these that are, his movies are involved. He's not going to be a director that's making a movie a year. You know, he's going to be making a movie every 2 or 3 years at best.
Or Woody Allen.
Yeah, yeah, or Woody Allen.
Let's not just talk about shit directors. We'll put Woody Allen in there too.
Yeah, so I mean, plus he wants to do Hellboy again. He wants to do Hellboy 3. So I can't see Del Toro's schedule opening up enough for Mountains of Madness to happen.
Dave is mad about this next story. He linked it twice on Twitter and then explained to me why that happens, and it's not because he's forgetful. I would do something like that. Paul Greengrass and George Clooney going to do something like try to steal some Best Picture nominations with a heist script that'll be penned by Argo writer Chris Tirino.
I'm usually on board for anything Clooney does. I think he's one of the best movie stars out there. I'm so interested in everything he does.
You like some Greengrass too.
I hate some Greengrass. I hate Greengrass. So that's the only thing is, like, if Greengrass can get out of the way and let this be a good movie despite him, I'm interested. But it seems like it's going to have a good script. It's going to have Clooney in this kind of role. Like, take Clooney out of the Ocean's 12 movies and put him in that kind of role, like, on his own. Yes, please. Like, I'm into that. But I don't want to be fucking nauseous during it.
Yeah, and I don't know that this is going to be like a Bourne movie where
it doesn't
there
have
is,
to be.
Matt Damon
walked across the street, and the camera, there were like six cuts, and the camera was just moving around. Like, hire a cameraman that's not epileptic is all I fucking ask you to do, Paul Greengrass. Like, set a fucking camera still for 30 goddamn seconds.
Put it on the crib with a pen under there.
Yes.
it really seems like this Terrio guy was a blacklist writer. Then it seems like after Argo, like he's become one of the in-demand writers now. So, I mean, I think that not having seen Argo, but everyone else has, and it's been a pretty good, got some pretty good reviews. So,
Likely to get a nom.
Yeah.
It.
So I think that, you know, he seems like a talented dude. You put him with Clooney, who's a talented dude, and, you know, Greengrass, who's a dude. Maybe we could have 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right?
I hope.
Entertainment guaranteed from Derek Connolly and Pixar. The safety not guaranteed writer and Day and Night director Teddy Newton are working on a mysterious product for Pixar.
Isn't every project for Pixar mysterious?
Yes.
At least for a while. I just think this is awesome because, like, you're going from a small safety not guaranteed type movie to writing a Pixar movie?
From an indie
to
anything
Pixar.
But that. Yeah.
That's fucking huge. And even Colin Turkerlov, that directed Safety Not Guaranteed, he's doing Flight of the Navigator remake for Disney. So to see this small movie make these two big things happen for these guys is awesome.
I like Day and Night. That was the short in front of Toy Story 3. Pixar, they do some good shorts, and they do some interesting things. I'm glad to see that they are taking people that, you know, are able to do Safety Not Guaranteed. Was a bit, and it's not an adult movie, but it's got, you know, themes in it that you wouldn't associate with a kids movie necessarily. So Pixar's movies are, I guess what I'm trying to say is they're not necessarily your normal kids fare. Like, you can enjoy them as an adult. And
do we still consider Pixar movies like kids movies?
I mean,
films is more accurate, but I don't even that, like.
Yeah, I mean, even that, like, I don't feel like I need a family to go see a Pixar movie. I have to go by my own damn self.
Yeah.
I don't need no family.
I'd rather watch Marita dance around without my kids around.
Jeez. That's gross, Dave. I'm done. Like, you can do the rest of the podcast yourself.
We need a break.
You got 20 minutes, go. Because you've just creeped me out and creeped out probably all of our listening audience, I'm going to punish you by starting off with a trailer that I knew, putting it on there, you were going to hate. It's Dark Skies. The best way I can describe it is Insidious with aliens and Felicity.
It looks so terrible. Like, first of all, Carrie Russell, like, okay, whatever. Like, I don't know where her career went. Like, she was okay in Waitress, but I can't see her headlining movies. And then even worse than that, you have Josh Hamilton in the male lead, who I just can't take serious. And then you have this movie that just looks fucking terrible. The birds flying into the window, funny. I'll give them that. That scene's hilarious. But then everything else,
I'm sure that's exactly what they were going for.
Any bird flying into a window, I don't care the context, hilarious. Because they're just windows. Like, there's a house there. You think there's just a hole in the house?
Don't those birds know?
You think there's just a random hole in the house? If there is a hole, what are you going to do when you get inside the house, birds?
That's what windows are. They're holes in houses. Sometimes they're open.
But yeah, this it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
I would like to see a good alien movie, but this isn't going to be it.
As the resident defender of Insidious, I don't think that was a terrible movie. This doesn't. It looks like, hey, that was mildly successful. How can we rip it off but not get sued? Oh, I know. Instead of ghosts, we'll use aliens. I don't know. I'm not telling you that I'm going to hate it, but I just don't think it's entirely necessary. What is entirely necessary is any movie starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and we've got one to talk about this week. It is called Snitch, essentially. DJ, as I am allowed to call him, becomes a snitch for the man to try and keep his son from going to real butt pound in jail for 10 years.
I mean, this is, he's already solidified as, he is the Schwarzenegger Stallone whatever of right now.
But a better actor.
But a legit actor with, I think, better charm. Like, Stallone and Schwarzenegger, they had the physical presence. They left a lot to be desired, but they did the action. I think The Rock has a charm that they lacked. So you put Stallone in this movie, I don't think it makes... Say this came out in the early 90s, you put Stallone in it, I don't think it changes the movie all that much, but I'm not interested in it. This I'll at least see because I almost will watch The Rock in almost anything. Just because he's compelling enough on screen.
Yeah, I agree. I watch Southland Tales.
Yeah. It's PG-13, though, which is weird because the trailer, there's a lot of action in the trailer. You can tell what kind of movie it's going to be. So it's it's that whole live free or die hard thing where you could have all the action you want as long as there's no fuck bombs. Or
there's one fuck bomb.
It barely.
Last you're Action Hero.
Yeah, you're allowed one fuck bomb
right. Yes.
In a PG-13 movie. So, which, whatever. Like, I didn't think it took away from Live Free or Die Hard that much. Except you're taking a character whose catchphrase is Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Basically saying, like, yeah, you can't say that a lot. So, I don't know. It just looks like a standard action movie, but I think he's compelling enough, I'll watch it.
That's the thing. It's maybe a standard action movie, but with a guy that you want to see. And, you know, I think that maybe there's actually a little bit, maybe more heart than you'd usually get in an action movie, and The Rock is somebody that can carry that off. Something that is becoming standard is sort of a retelling of a story that we all know from our childhood. You know, we've talked about the Hansel and Gretel, the witch hunters. We talked quite a bit about the Snow White movie and the Huntsman. Looks like we got the next one, which is Jack the Giant Slayer. You know what? I will see anything with Ewan McGregor.
You know what? I don't know if I've badmouthed it on this show. I've had zero interest in Jack the Giant Slayer. I thought it was a waste of Bryan Singer's time. I thought he's better than this. But I will admit, this trailer swayed me. Nicholas Holt, he's the lead. I think he's born to be a star. I've said that before. Ewan McGregor, he has a feeling of Big Fish, Ewan McGregor, which easily my favorite Big Fish, or easily my favorite Ewan McGregor movie. Stanley Tucci looks very Tucci-ish. It looks like Willow.
And that's what I was thinking. It looks
like one of my favorite movies ever.
It looks like they're having fun when they made the movie.
It looks just like a blast. Like it looks like Ewan McGregor has that charm and that entertaining thing about him that he doesn't always get to do. Tucci looks like he's set free to just be fun and entertaining, but not distract from the story because it looks like it all fits in this universe. And it looks pretty awesome, I think.
I think of, without having seen, I mean, I've seen the trailer for, you know, all of the movies that I just mentioned, the Snow White and the Huntsman, the Hansel and Gretel. I think this trailer by far was the best. And I think that, you know, Snow White did well. I mean, obviously well enough to get a sequel. But I think this will be the one that, you know, does the best in terms of box office. Because I think that it captures, you know, what you're looking for. I think parents will like it. It'll be okay for kids. It's not too scary. There's enough like fun that, you know, kids will like it as well.
Plus Bryan Singer has. Yeah. So yeah, I'm interested now.
All right. Very good. A movie that you were interested in because of the Duplass brothers. So we put this on.
A Duplass brother.
Well, okay.
Script by Mark Duplass.
But they're both producing it, I think.
Directed by Mark Duplass's wife, Katie Asselton.
It is Black Rock with Kate Bosworth, which I haven't seen her since that ill-fated Superman movie. So good to see she's back.
Her, Lake Bell, Kate Asselton.
Yeah.
Directing and starring.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Thoughts?
I'm into it. It's just three women go to an island. They find some hunters.
It's Donkey Punch on an island.
It's exactly Donkey Punch. Like, I got the same feeling. I don't know if you only think that because I've talked about that movie so much.
No, I got that feeling because that's what it is. The difference I saw with Donkey Punch is that movie seemed like it knew it was tongue-in-cheek. I don't get that feeling from this.
No, I don't think it will be.
This does seem like a straight-up...
But the tongue-in-cheekness of Donkey Punch was your traditional, your men are the aggressors, and, you know, everybody's the victim. This is, it flipped. So, I mean, the women are the ones that cause the issue, and then they're the ones being hunted. So, I think it looks good. I like Katie Asselton. I like, you know, Lake Bell's more known for comedy, but I think they're going to do well in this. And I like Mark Duplass. Everything he's written, I've enjoyed. He did this one on his own. I like her as a director. She did The Freebie with herself and Dax Shepard, which was really good, unique take on like a rom-com kind of. So it was, I just like anybody in that family. I know I'm a Duplass brother, like,
yes,
chill.
That's what I mean. I think you're a little too close to this one. I think it looks shite. I like the Duplass brothers well enough, not so much that I'm willing to say anything they do is going to be awesome, because I think this looks like a turd waiting to happen.
I like Kate Bosworth, though, and
I like her too.
Hasselton, and
I say this is going to be a turd. Sorry. I hate to break it to you. I think I took a flyer on this just because, you know, as much as you like the Duplass brothers, I goddamn love me some Bill Murray. I will take any excuse to talk about Bill Murray. And I'm going to do that here in probably about 10 minutes anyway. This movie, starring Bill Murray, Jason Schwartzman, and Charlie Sheen, playing the lead in A Glimpse Inside the Mind of Charles Swan III. This absolutely looks like a Wes Anderson movie.
It's a Wes Anderson movie.
Yes.
Just not directed by Wes Anderson.
That's the thing. And it looks like if you're going to try and, hey, this is my take on a Wes Anderson movie, it looks so goddamn good, I believe that Wes Anderson did direct the trailer.
Well, I mean, it's Roman Coppola's, who's obviously related to Schwartzman, and it's his directorial debut. He co-wrote Darjeeling Limited with Wes Anderson and Moonrise Kingdom with Wes Anderson.
The aforementioned, yeah.
So it's obvious that that's where everything's coming from. But it looks just like a Wes Anderson movie.
And it has half the cast of a Wes Anderson movie.
And it's hard to say because Wes Anderson is so unique. So it's hard to look at this without just thinking, like, you're just mimicking your friend. Like, but the Coppolas have had good careers.
Yeah.
They've all been able to establish their own sort of vision. Like, Sophia has it. Like, everybody's done it. Even Nicolas Cage, like, they all have something about them that makes them unique. And I just worry that Roman Coppola's going to fall into what he's familiar with and not give us that Coppola uniqueness.
I agree with you. This doesn't seem like it's at all different from Wes Anderson's stuff, but I like his stuff.
With that said, it looks good.
Yeah, exactly. And
I was turned off because fuck Charlie Sheen. But everything else around it, I have no clue what it's about. But it,
don't care. I mean, it looks
Schwartzman and Bill Murray look worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it looks wacky. It looks like you know, if you watch a Wes Anderson trailer, you're not really sure what the hell the movie's going to be about. But there's enough things in it that are funny that I think it's worth giving a try. One that you put on there at the last minute was worth giving it a try. I give it a year. British comedy. I will admit, Stephen Merchant is in the trailer quite a bit. I do like that guy, and this movie does look fucking hilarious.
It looks fucking... I laughed through the whole trailer. Like,
you did. You LOL'd.
I've watched the trailer like 7 times already. It's Rose Byrne, who I fucking love, which he's not doing Insidious. Anna Faris is in it. Simon Baker, the Mentalist, is in it. Rafe Spall, who I fucking love. Like, the cast is awesome. Minnie Driver shows up. It's fucking funny. Like, the trailer is... good jokes from beginning to end.
I think the first 10 seconds of the trailer.
It starts off with a really good joke, and then it ends with an even better joke, and everything in between it is quality.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is one of the better crafted trailers in terms of, I mean, you always worry with a comedy that, okay, these are going to be the funniest parts of the movie. I don't get that thought. I think these are just, hey, here's 2.5 minutes of really funny shit. It's just 2.5 minutes of, you know, maybe 90 minutes of really funny shit.
And it's just, British comedies like this are more, they're less safe than America. And I hate, that sounds so pretentious when I say that, but they're willing to take more chances. And this would be, I think this is going to be good. It's just Rose Byrne and Rafe Spall get married, and then his ex-flame shows up, and then she has a hunky new client. And it just, everything around that, it looks funny. It looks really fucking good.
Yeah, check it out. And if you don't LOL within the first 10 to 15 seconds, then maybe this one isn't for you. We've got essentially one more trailer and then a teaser at the end. The trailer, and I use that term loosely too, because
it's a teaser.
It's a teaser as well.
We have a teaser and a viral thing.
Okay, yeah. A teaser about a movie that deals with a virus. Wreck 4, Apocalypse.
It's essentially Wreck 2.
Yeah, yeah. It's the direct sequel to Wreck, And essentially the teaser is just like, hey, this is Wreck in a minute and 20 seconds.
I forget what other trailer came out recently where the trailer, it was for a sequel, but the first 60 seconds of a 90 second teaser was just basically recapping the first one.
Yeah, in case you didn't see
it. So that's what this was. Wreck 4 Apocalypse, which just picks up right where the first one left off, which makes it hard to imagine that this movie is anything other than more of the first one. I don't know where you could go with it that's going to be different.
They go on a platform in the middle of the ocean. Another isolated place.
Is that for reals?
Yes, I think so. I read that's...
Because what was the second one? Second one was a plane.
On a plane. The third reception, one was at a wedding reception. Reception. Yes. I'm going to get more mileage out of that joke until we...
So at no point has this been like a wide thing.
I don't know. I haven't... Well, I mean, two probably wasn't. Three, I'm not sure. But whatever. I think
movies,
Wreck,
you could spin them out all the time. Wreck, I don't know, cool. If this is supposed to be the last one. I would think it'd be dumb,
it is.
Too.
From what I understand, it is, despite the fact that it is actually called Apocalypse, that would lead you to believe it's the last one, but I do think I read that this is kind of it for the franchise. I think it's cool that they're going back to do a direct sequel of the first one, which I thought is really, it's the only one I've seen. So as far as I know, it's the best one.
The first one was good. Timing was good. It jumped out right ahead of the found footage frenzy. I'm kind of shocked Quarantine didn't do as well in the States, but it was good. I like the Wreck.
Wreck 1. So maybe we'll get together and watch Wreck 4 because, again, we like the first one. Speaking of viral and found footage, this video is for Pacific Rim, the Guillermo del Toro thing, and it is not necessarily found footage, but it's like that. It's cobbled together, you know, fake news feeds and eyewitness reporting about the giant monsters. Yeah, that we knew Pacific Rim was a monster movie, but we really hadn't seen any monsters. And this trailer kind of reminded me a bit of a Cloverfield feel, but you actually get to see a bit more of the monster that fucks up San Francisco.
Yeah, and where Cloverfield is, the comparison makes sense, but the movie's not going to be like this.
Yeah, you're right, yes.
You're having like a Cloverfield type teaser.
Yeah.
But with Cloverfield, that teaser was how the movie is. This is just news footage that I thought was cool, but I mean, we know so little about this movie. I thought it took place in space. I knew we were fighting giant robots with or giant monsters
with
giant
robots.
Yeah, I thought it was in space. I didn't know it was on Earth, but whatever. I'm just excited for this movie.
Welcome to Earth, Dave.
I like Charlie Hunnam. I like the cast of this. I think it's going to be
Charlie
awesome.
Charlie Day.
Charlie Day.
Yeah.
Ron Perlman.
Yep.
It's going to be awesome, but...
And this is, I just got excited because this is really kind of the first thing that we as the general public can see, you know, unless you got to see anything from Comic-Con, you know, this is the first taste we get of the movie. So I did want to mention that it's out there, you know, check it out.
I just think it's funny you do bring up the Cloverfield thing because Cloverfield was the first movie to really...
Have that kind of campaign.
To have a viral campaign.
Right.
And I was into it.
Yeah.
I friended all the characters on MySpace. Like I followed all the viral shit. Like I was into it. And then I saw the movie and thought, I'm never investing this much into a movie again. So that was like the first one to do that whole viral thing. It was the last one that I followed.
And I'm not suggesting that you invest a lot into this. I'm just saying.
It was cool to watch, though.
Yeah.
It was absolutely cool to
take
watch.
Take a minute and a half, and you know, you can see the monster and get an idea of what the movie is going to be like before you end up seeing it, you know, here next year. So that's it. I think that's it for the trailers, right? I skipped around, but I think I hit them all. Not a whole lot in the box office this week. We got one movie opening in wide release. It is Playing for Keeps.
Playing for Keeps. I don't know what happened to Gerard Butler's career, but Playing for Keeps and that last one that came out, Chasing Mavericks, they look like fake trailers for a movie where Gerard Butler was like this big hunky guy that should have been doing action movies, but instead was doing these like stupid generic romantic comedies. That's what they look like. Chasing Mavericks and Playing for Keeps just look like fake trailers to be in a movie that you watch, and it's just like, oh, fuck, those are terrible fake movies. But they're terrible real movies.
Yeah, and you know what? I like soccer a lot, and Gerard Butler's cool with me, but those two things are not enough to get me in.
What a career that guy is. Like, what is...
He could have been Bond.
he blows my mind. Like, he does this shit, and he was in that rhythm where he was just doing stupid fucking Katherine Heigl movie after fucking Jennifer Aniston movie, and it's just like, you gotta, he does Machine Gun Preacher, and it's like, oh, okay, he gets it. Then he does this and fucking the surfing movie. The fuck, butt?
Brother needs to eat.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So that's your wide release this week, Playing for Keeps. We've got Lay the Favorite, will be released in 40 theaters.
Also looks terrible. And looks like Rebecca Hall's going to destroy this movie, like ruin this movie.
Most of us aren't going to be able to see it anyway. Even less people, by a factor of 10, are going to be able to see Hyde Park on Hudson, which is Bill Murray playing FDR.
Which, yeah, I don't really give a shit.
No.
I hear Bill Murray's really good in it, but that the movie is not really good.
That's the thing. I kind of feel like Bill Murray, maybe, from what I've read, could backdoor himself into a nomination for this movie. But I don't think it's going to be particularly well done or particularly interesting. I think if I was going to see a movie about a former president, it's going to be Lincoln, which I still have to see. Maybe I'll get around to seeing it this week, because God knows I won't be playing for keeps. But if you're not going to go see Playing for Keeps or Lincoln, and you're going to take a look at something either Netflix, on the TV, the DVD, Dave, why don't you give the folks a suggestion, something to watch?
I'm going
to
go a few. I'm going to start with just, I actually had a legit one this week. I stumbled across something on Netflix that I randomly watched, and it turned out to be decent. A movie called Repeaters. It was basically a bunch of two dudes and...
What was it called?
Repeaters.
What?
Repeaters. Yeah, it's basically Amanda...
One more time.
Amanda Crew and two dudes that are all in this, like, drug rehab facility that start living the same day over and over again. So it's like Groundhog Day for druggies.
Huh.
It takes some really fucking turns that you really don't expect. And actually pretty decent. Like, it wasn't great, but it was worth watching. And then just to go back to something we talked about earlier, Lee Pace. We talked about him with Guardians of the Galaxy. Watch The Fall. Fucking awesome movie. That's his movie. Like, that's him starring in a movie. And then if you want outside of TV or outside of movies, I'm going to throw a TV show at you. Also Lee Pace related, Wonderfalls. Probably my favorite TV show ever.
That's going back there. I just saw that the chick from Wonderfalls was in a
Catherine
trailer.
Catherine DeVernis?
Yeah. She popped up in something we did. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's where she's at.
Well, the sister from Wonderfalls is in a ton of shit now.
Yeah.
Like, she shows up all the time.
And she was hotter anyway. But
Lee Pace, I guess I could have plugged Pushing Daisies, too.
You could have. But
I'll go Wonderfalls.
I'm sure more people probably saw Pushing Daisies anyway. No biggie.
Long story short, though, Lee Pace is awesome.
Yeah. Good dude. I know him personally. Whatever. I've got three for you. Two of which I've seen. They're all available on DVD this week. Apparently, as Dave can attest to, there's some big movie came out on DVD Tuesday that I'm sure most of you probably have already seen. Anyway, these three, maybe you haven't seen. Beasts of the Southern Wild, Butter, and VHS.
There's also a fourth one that includes your girl.
Yeah, I almost...
Odd Life of Timothy Green.
I was going to say, I almost said, if you really want to do it, if you want to have yourself a Jennifer Garner film festival.
A Garner-thon, you could call it.
You could. I'm not going to. I'm going to call it a Jennifer Garner, a Mrs. Ben Affleck film festival. Check out Odd Life of Timothy Green and Butter, all available on DVD. I feel like we've talked about VHS a lot, so if you haven't had a chance to see that yet, it's there. Take a look. Whatever. I'm going to check out Beasts of the Southern Wild, though. Like,
I'm very excited for that. Yeah. I actually think I'm going to watch that tonight or yesterday if you're listening to this the day after we record it.
Dave's going to watch it on Tuesday night. So if you ever want to if you're ever wondering what Dave was doing on December the 4th, he was watching Beasts of the Southern Wild and hopefully writing the post for this particular podcast. He's shaking his head no, but he's going to do it because that's what Dave does. When he's not writing posts, he can also be found
at Dave Bacella on Twitter, or you can check out my other show, Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. At Eric and Dave on Twitter. That's Eric with a K, ericanddave.com. We took a week off last week and then came back with an hour and 45-minute episode this week. So you can take this week off if you want. But
or listen to half of it.
Yeah, that's Eric. My iron just fell. That's ericanddave.com, Eric with a K. And at Dave Bissell on Twitter.
And you can get at us throughout the normal channels, our website page, moviesonup.com. You can, we're going to try and put up a blog section. So we're going to put up some movie reviews there. So if you see something, you want to leave us a review of the movie you saw, that'd be great. Be an appropriate place to do that. You can tweet at us at moviesonup on the Twitter, or you can interact with Dave via our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup.
Also, get a hold of us. We're in December now, as we established. Almost time for end-of-the-year lists. So if you've been keeping track of one through the year, or you like to do it at the end of the year, send us a top 10 list, top 20 list, whatever. Whatever movies you thought were great this year that really stick out, let us know. Sometime in the next few weeks, we'll be doing our best of
2012. Did you forget what year it
was?
Yeah. It's the year of John Cusack, 2012. Year of John Lithgow. 2012, right? Anyway, yeah, please do that. Help us out. And until next week,
keep it up.